Talk with your hosts, Dan Matthews and Max Frater.
Our first live show on the Waxworm Radio Experience on the TuneIn app. And Max, we are at our new home. We are in our new time slot. And the season is rocking and rolling.
I think for the past 6 months, Dan, you and I have been kind of clawing to figure out what would be the best thing to bring up on a weekly basis for Lacrosse Talk ever since the MLL Championship ended back in August. This week, the real problem is, are we going to be able to fit everything in? I mean, this was an insane opening weekend of lacrosse, a lot earlier than normal, too, which I'm kind of liking now, being able to see these games open up and see what everybody's looking like at the beginning of August. Not what we expected at all.
No, not at all. And the season is off to a tremendous start collegiately. First, let's talk about the women and the game that Southern Cal had against Northwestern yesterday, leading for the entire game, got the first 7 goals of the game, and then Northwestern staging their furious comeback and winning the game in overtime against Southern Cal. What a phenomenal game that was, and I know that Hallie Quinellan talked about the Southern Cal team, and she really expected them to emerge as a top 20 caliber team this year, and from all looks of it, they sure did.
And I think that's something that you're going to see out of not just men's and women's teams, out of everybody at the beginning of the season. As you said, Northwestern jumping out to a hot start, but how do you maintain it? I think that's the biggest thing that you learn as a team throughout the course of the season, is that you're going to have your ups and downs, you're going to have your runs, but at the end of the game, when it comes down to it, the other team is going to find a run of their own. How do you combat that? How do you put in the dagger to end the game right there? Northwestern couldn't do it, and as you said, USC coming up with the first big win of the year.
Right, and a phenomenal performance that we had there at Southern Cal. Big upset yesterday in the men's ranks, a couple of them, when you look at Detroit Mercy's win over Ohio State, and at the same time, Marquette went to Lehigh and took down the Mountain Hawks.
So you had the 3 big upsets that were in the polls as far as the top 25 goes. You have Loyola going down to Virginia. You have Lehigh, as you said, going down to Marquette. And then you have the Bulldogs going down to Colgate. And those were just the people who were in, like I said, the polls. Then you had another one, Ohio State losing to Detroit Mercy. You had BU with a huge win over Mercer, 18-6. I mean, for a second-year program, not even close. And then you look at second-year program, like Richmond taking it to St. Joe's. So a lot of these teams seeing their first, Michigan going 16-8 over Bellarmine. So a lot of these newer programs are seeing the first winning record of their entire program history. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really is. And an exciting time to be a lacrosse fan, an exciting time to be a lacrosse broadcaster, an exciting time to be launching a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week Lacrosse Talk radio platform. New shows being added every week. And can't thank Worm enough for making sure that we're a part of it. And lo and behold, in 2 weeks, our live play-by-play schedule will get underway with 2 big games right in our backyard, as Canisius will take on Furman at the Faceoff Classic at Barton Stadium against the University of Denver, or at the University of Denver. And then the next day, Canisius will play an Air Force squad that gave Duke all they could handle for 2.5 quarters today.
Very good game today by the Falcons against the Blue Devils. Kind of interesting to see when it comes to the 2-time reigning champs. I mean, we know there's always that kind of ramp-up period with Donowski's Duke teams at the beginning of the season. They'll drop some early games, and then they pick up momentum as they go. I would be a little bit concerned, they picked wins over Point and over Air Force earlier today, but still a lot of concerns. I mean, Duke and every team across the nation is going to lose their top seniors, their top performers, but, I mean, Duke has a lot of holes to fill, and I think they learned that this weekend. But, I mean, Air Force, when it came to the game they played today, I think that they had to make a statement today because they're an independent team. They don't have a conference they can win. Didn't pick up the win against Duke, have another chance against Denver. But I think they picked up some momentum going forward this season.
I agree 100%. And you've got a Duke squad, don't forget, that had to suspend three players entering this weekend. We don't know when they'll be back. We're going to step aside, take a break, and we're going to get this show underway as we talk to one of our NCAA insiders, Eamon McEnany, right after this.
Me, a cat, moving in with a new human. It took a little getting used to. She has these weird games she likes to play, like this giant feather. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. It's almost like she thinks I enjoy it. But seeing how much fun she gets out of it, well, I guess it makes it all worth it. Humans.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
$10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed a trend. My humans do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket. But it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place. And then they act so surprised when I find them. But I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
That's what happened yesterday in the world of lacrosse. It erupted on the scene in a big-time way with the NCAA Division I, II, and III lacrosse season. I don't know if you paid attention, Max, but you know, because my son was recruited at the University of Tampa, I paid close attention to them, and they came out and just absolutely throttled number 11 Queens yesterday. This Tampa squad, my pick to win the NCAA Division II title this year.
Bold prediction. I mean, they're obviously going to have their way in by winning the Southern Conference, but when you've got Lemoyne and you've got Merrimack and you've got, who am I thinking of right now, Limestone, who just won the championship, I mean, they still have many hurdles to cross when it comes to winning it. They have one heck of a squad, though. They've been able to build very, very quickly, and they're already one of the prominent Division II programs.
Not a doubt about it. We promised Eamon McEnany, and sure as heck as we promised him, he's on the line with us. Eamon, we know you hate lacrosse in February, but we sure got off to a great start yesterday.
Oh, yeah, it was great to see. I mean, I love lacrosse any time of the year. I just wish it would be better for the fans to have it a little bit warmer. But I certainly was locked in on that Loyola Virginia game on the internet and following some of the other games. A big weekend for Duke as they try to figure it out, a little undermanned for now. But, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love seeing the sport and love having the season kick off. I just wish it was a little bit warmer for the fans and for the play, to be quite honest with you.
And Eamon, it's my bad. I did tell you 7:05. I just didn't have my my Eastern to Mountain conversion going very well, obviously.
Oh, no sweat. No, we're all set now, ready to go. So I'm glad I saw your text. So we're good to go.
Eamon, a couple of upsets yesterday with Detroit taking down Ohio State and the Mountain Hawks at Lehigh losing to Marquette. Do you think this is just kind of a sign of the times that we're going to start to see more parity in the NCAA?
Oh, of course. But, I mean, neither one of those scores should shock us. Detroit a couple of years ago, I know it was one game, but, had Notre Dame on the ropes, a Notre Dame team that went on to the Final Four that year, I believe. I lose track. Maybe that was a quarterfinal for Notre Dame that year. But anyway, Detroit went into Arlotta Stadium and had them beat. Notre Dame had to pull one out. Who knows, how good, some of these teams are that we rank in sort of from 10 to 25. But Joe Amplo has been doing a great job out there at Marquette. They had a couple of wins last year against St. John's, Hofstra, and Rutgers. So, right now there are enough players out there. It's not only is it parity, but I think it's a result of this early recruiting because a lot of the big boys go in and snap up early and are done. And a school such as Marquette or Detroit has to wait, and they get late bloomers, and they get Canadians, and they get kids who maybe by the time they're in college are just as good as the hotshot recruits that the big boys are locking up when they're in the second grade.
Eamon, it's good to hear from you again. It usually means it's during the best time of the season. You said that you were locked in on that Loyola Virginia game, which was arguably the game of the week. Same outcome as last year with Virginia being the one goal winners. Except the rallying team wasn't able to push it to overtime with Loyola missing the final shot of the game. But what did you take away from this year's version of the Wahoo Greyhound Showdown at the beginning of the season?
Well, first of all, I think that's a huge win for Virginia because as depleted as they are on defense, with Scales going down and Danseglio not available or ineligible, they're going to give up a lot of goals, and I just don't know how good they are. I mean, they always have talent, obviously, but they kind of petered out at the end of last year, losing to Hopkins in the first round. So if you're a Virginia fan, you got to be nervous. If you're a lacrosse fan, I think you want to watch every Virginia game because I don't think they're going to be able to stop too many teams. But at the same point, I think they have great athletes to score. But I think that's a huge win for Virginia to go into Loyola on the road and kick the season off. Loyola is going to be fine in the Patriot League. I still think they're the class of the Patriot League. And so I think they'll get into the tournament. I think their seeding will be hurt once again because that's a game that they could have used because I don't know how big their RPI will be once you take in the totality of the Patriot League. But to answer your question, I think that's a nice statement win and a nice way to start the season for Dom Stargia and the Cavaliers because when you took a look at them and some of the stories in the offseason, you kind of thought that they might be behind the eight ball.
Eamon, Duke played back-to-back games this weekend, High Point yesterday, Air Force today. High Point gave Duke all they could handle for an entire game yesterday, and Air Force for 2.5 quarters today. Duke has three players that were suspended. They have a lot of holes to fill prior to that. What do you make of Duke as they head into this year and what this team can or should be?
What I always make of Duke, don't judge them by February and March. I know that's simplistic, but they'll figure it out. I mean, certainly they have holes to fill, and I think this might be the one year outside of Miles Jones and Deemer Class, they don't have that great talent to bail them out or that we don't remember. I think we overlooked Jordan Wolf when the great class of Lawson and Trapuka graduated. And obviously Wolf was a Player of the Year candidate, and last year, outside of almost any other year, would have won the Player of the Year. Outside of Miles Jones, I don't know if they have that guy right now. And, the three guys that they lost, played roles. Certainly they were going to count on Keenan a lot. Keenan stepped up last year on the tournament when Dion went down, so he would have been a nice player. But I think we all know by now, never count out Duke in February and March, and never put too much stock in whatever Duke is doing in February and March. I don't know if they continue the streak and get to the Final Four this year, but I'm certainly not going to sit here on February, 8th, and say they're not. I've learned my lesson. 2 years ago, I said they were toast in early March, and they won the national championship.
And you'd rather not even be talking about lacrosse on February 8th, right?
Well, that's true. I mean, this is true. I'm not going to back down from that until we move the season back. I just think at the Division I men's level, where we need to grow the game fans-wise, I think the best thing to do is push the season back. You can't get on TV, and you can't get fans to the game. Although I will say I was impressed by the crowd at the Loyola game. They have a great student body at that school, a great facility at that school, so it looked like a great time watching it on the Internet. But I just think in general, I don't know how many fans are getting to these games when there's snowbanks around the field.
How far back do you push this season? We know the baseball starts about now, but they don't end until mid to late June. And
right.
By mid to late June, you don't have students there anymore. So what do you do with that whole process?
Well, I understand that's the negative as far as the administrations and the schools are considering. They don't want to have students on campus that they don't have to pay for, or that they don't want to pay for. But I think if you push it back 2 weeks, it would make a big deal. And unfortunately, the allure of Memorial Day has come and gone. I mean, when we were younger, that was it. You made your plans around that weekend, no matter where it was, you were going to go, you were going to load up the family truckster, and you were going to go watch those games. For whatever factors, the attendance at Memorial Day is down. So if Memorial Day is not the Holy Grail anymore, then I don't know why we can't push it back. And maybe even I know my colleague Quint Kesenick has thought about just pushing it back a week so you get a better game, because that game on Monday hardly ever is as well played as the games on Saturday are. I don't know if you can do that to the fans. I think the fans like it in one big block weekend, much like the Final Four in basketball and hockey. But I think if you really want to grow the sport at the entertainment value, you have to push it back a couple of weeks, because – you're not even getting on TV right now. I mean, we're talking about all these great games. Duke's playing Denver, and Denver's playing Notre Dame, and those two games aren't on TV because there's just aren't enough slots to put them on. February lacrosse is not getting on TV. And I know we've gone from nothing to a lot, but if you really want to break through and create fans, I think you need to be on TV even more and get better time slots. I'm doing a game, Hofstra at Princeton, on a Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Who's going to be able to watch that game? So you're not helping yourself ratings-wise.
I make time.
What's that?
I will, because I make time to watch it. But,
that's just a tough time. I mean, even if you love lacrosse, you probably have practice or your own game at that point. And I'm not bashing, ESPNU for putting it there, because there's 9 other basketball games that will get better ratings. But if you really care about growing the sport at the entertainment level, and I understand that is not the main objective of Division I men's lacrosse coaches. But I think as a sport, someone involved in the sport has to think about that.
Eamon, final question for you. 3 teams in the top 25 went down in week 1. We already talked about Loyola dropping to Virginia. You also had Lehigh falling to Marquette and Bryant falling to Colgate. Of these 3 teams that fell to the upset, who does it hit the hardest?
Well, I mean, when you're Bryant and Lehigh, you probably got to win your league to get in anyway. I think Loyola should win that league and get in, but it's going to hurt them seeding-wise. I mean, they took a hit last year seeding-wise, and got stuck with Albany in the first round. So I would think, although it's early to answer that question, I think it hurts Loyola the most, even though I think Loyola is probably safe to get into the tournament. I think those 3 teams are only getting in if they win their automatic bid anyway, just because of the strength of schedule. Loyola may go on a run. They probably have the talent, to be a top 10 team, but I just don't know how much of an RPI you're going to have with that league and the totality of that league's schedule.
Eamon, as always, we appreciate it, and this will just be the first of many times that we'll sit and chat on Lacrosse Talk.
All right, guys, thanks for having me on. Always enjoy it, and let the games begin. We're underway, off and running.
Thanks, Eamon.
Thank you, Eamon.
All right, talk to you guys later. Thanks, bye.
Our insider for the day, and we'll have a constant rotation of great informationalists. Eamon McEnany, Terry Foy, Matt Kinnear. I know we'll throw in Carcaterra and Kesnick during the course of the season. So for great insight on the NCAA, just tune in right here on Lacrosse Talk. We'll be back to chat MCLA lacrosse with Trey Lamphere in just a moment.
We have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and, of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a lavish terrier-hound-chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
Mm-hmm. I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle. Simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up, like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and theshelterpetproject.org.
Me, moving in with a new human. It took a little getting used to. She has these weird games she likes to play, like this giant feather. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. It's almost like she thinks I enjoy it. But seeing how much fun she gets out of it, well, I guess it makes it all worth it. Humans.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and theshelterpetproject.org.
Back on Lacrosse Talk, Dan Matthews with Max Frater. Thrilled to death to be on our new home, the Lax Worm Radio Experience on TuneIn. And Max got dressed up for the occasion today and is wearing his Lax Worm shirt that I brought back for him from convention. And it's just a great time to be a lacrosse fan, whether it's NCAA lacrosse, or MCLA lacrosse, or high school lacrosse. It's just a great, great time to be in the wonderful world of lacrosse. Let's bring in our next guest. He is our new MCLA insider, or at least this is going to be one heck of an audition for him, Trey Lanthier, who is a student down at Arizona State University. He is also doing an internship with the MCLA. And if the emails I get are any indication, there will be nothing, Max, that we can't throw at Trey that he's not going to be able to talk about. Trey, we're so glad to have you here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on, guys.
Hey, Trey, you know, the interesting topic, the one that really floated or whatever, my boat, over the course of the weekend was the talk of UT Dallas and their star, Casey Glad, who, if he maintains his pace, will shatter records that Cam Holding laid out just a few years ago. This UT Dallas squad plays Sam Houston State next week. If they beat Sam Houston, is there anything standing in their way of the Division II LSA crown?
Probably not. Probably not. The LSA D2 is not necessarily at the top of the D2 standings as far as divisions go. And last year they weren't even able to send a team to the tournament. Sam Houston State did win the conference. But I would expect this UT Dallas team to give Sam Houston State a run for their money. And beyond that, you're right, there's really nothing else standing in their way. I think Tulsa has some things going in their direction, but not enough to stop this offense that UT Dallas has somehow put together. Head coach Zach Gutierrez really has something going here. They've scored 58 goals through three games, but more importantly, they've only allowed 13. Playing some great defense, but again, they haven't played the top-tier teams in the LSA yet. So I don't want to jump overboard on them quite yet, but they've proven that they can score at will against some of these teams.
How long has UT Dallas been a program, and what's their athletic department background? Do you know?
This actually is their first year within the MCLA. They initially tried to join back in 2013, and things just fell through. They didn't go the way they planned. Took off 2014, and now they're back. They're finally putting themselves on the MCLA radar, and they're doing it in a big way. As far as the athletic program, I'm not entirely sure how the university is as far as backing them, but interestingly enough, they have an assistant coach, Sam Lockett. I'm just seeing this now. Who used to play for Arizona State and was consistently a contender at ASU, and I'm sure that mentality can help carry over as well.
Trey, we appreciate you coming on Lacrosse Talk here, and welcome to the show. Taking a look at the games that happened over the course of the week, for the most part, both Division I and D2, the top 25 was pretty quiet, but I think some of the bigger games that stood out to me were Dominican and Sonoma State, with the Penguins winning over them in their first WCLL game, and then Dayton taking down Palm Beach, Atlantic, and SCAD in back-to-back games. So talk about those two a little bit and what that means for Dominican being new to the MCLA, and then Dayton really turning it on starting from last year.
Well, Dominican was a team that a lot of people overlooked. I don't think anybody gave them the credit they deserved. Coming from the NCAA ranks, they were the 16th out of the rankings. And remember, Sonoma State ranked number 16. So a lot of people had expected the Seawolves to really take this one. And instead, it was Dominican who came charging out. I don't think the scoreboard tells the full story. Dominican was up 14-12, but they had a 9-point lead in the second half at one point. So it took a Sonoma State epic comeback just to pull this win in two. Dominican is for real. And I think that you're going to hear that team name atop the WCLL, at least in the conversation there. Cal Poly also had a great showing against Santa Barbara to start out their season. So, I mean, you can't overlook the Mustangs, but Dominican is a team that's definitely on everybody's radar now after really taking it to Sonoma State for such a long duration of that game until the Seawolves were able to fight back into it. And then on the D2 side, you're right, Dayton with a great weekend, beating SCAD, beating Palm Beach Atlantic. It's not the fact that they won these games that's impressive to me. It's the way they won these games. They're winning games by 10 or more goals, and doing that against they beat D1 Vanderbilt last weekend, and then beat SCAD by 8 goals, beat Palm Beach Atlantic by 10. These are large margins, and to do that against ranked teams. SCAD was number 12, Palm Beach Atlantic number 16. This Dayton team is for real, and I think that a lot of teams – obviously saw that with them being number 3 in the country, but maybe they might be in title contention officially now with the St. John's and Grand Valley States of the world.
Keeping it with the WCLL, there's going to be one team that we won't see for the remainder of 2015, and that's going to be Chico State. Talk about the situation that's going on over there and why we will not see them play a game this season.
Well, another tragedy in the lacrosse world, this time a student at Chico State, freshman lacrosse player, was at a party. As he left the party, he was obviously intoxicated and was killed. And an internal review was conducted by Chico State University, and they decided that because the party had been thrown by the lacrosse teams, both men's and women's, they were going to terminate the entire 2015 season. So that's been kind of shaking things up a little bit in the WCLL, because Chico State's been something of a mainstay in that conference. But I mean, when you hear stories like this, it's always a sad thing to hear, just with how this whole thing ended and the fact that it's going to impact their program for years to come. But in this case, I personally believe that the punishment fits the crime. I think that, when you reach that point at the party scale, it's probably time to reevaluate your priorities.
It is sad, and unfortunately, lacrosse has this tendency periodically to draw some negative attention to itself. Negative attention, let's talk about the team that maybe they what does their season hold for them? UC Santa Barbara, not even a contest with Cal Poly, and these are two teams that are consistently vying for an SLC crown. Is Santa Barbara in panic mode already?
I think it might be safe to say that the panic button is almost being hit. I don't want to jump to conclusions too early. Here's why. Last year, Chapman was ranked number 5 starting out the season. And I don't know if you guys remember, but they did not start the season well. They went 1-4 in their first 5 games. And everybody was jumping off the bandwagon. Everybody was saying, all right, Chapman's down. It's time to head off and look for another team to support. And they ended up making it to the semifinals and being a game away from a national championship appearance. So starts can be deceiving, but this loss is bad. And it comes a week after they were only able to beat USC by 1 goal in a very low-scoring 5-4 game. And then Cal Poly beating them yesterday 11-2. That's not tolerable for a program like UC Santa Barbara. But this is really what the transition from last year's team has been. Head coach Mike Allen has done everything he can, but a lot of talent was lost, most notably Casey Mix, who was supposed to be the face of this program going forward, had an outstanding freshman season, and then decided that he would no longer be playing this year. And I think that hurt their offense a lot, and you can see it in their goal totals. I mean, 7 goals in 2 games is not what you want to see as a potential powerhouse team.
Trey, let's talk a little bit of crossover, because you're not going to see it for the remainder of the season now that the regular season has started up, between the Division II teams and D1. You mentioned earlier that Dayton beat Vanderbilt earlier on before the regular season started. You've also got scrimmages of Concordia beating UCLA, Kennesaw State taking it to Vanderbilt as well, Grove City beating Pitt. What is this saying about the top teams in MCLA D2 as compared to some of your run-of-the-mill or maybe just outside of the cusp teams in Division I?
Well, I think the lines are starting to blur. I think you're starting to see some of these D2 teams rise up to the level of these D1 teams. And a great example was yesterday, Concordia scrimmaged against Chapman, and that game ended up in Concordia's favor, 9-8 in overtime. I mean, Chapman was a semifinal team last year, and they're the number 3 team in the country right now. And I looked into it, because sometimes teams don't play their starters on a scrimmage. They played all of their starters. Their starters were playing, and they still lost to Concordia. I think it says a lot about Concordia, but I also think that Chapman has to be a little worried before their season opener against Texas. But you're seeing a lot of D2 teams start to contend and start to go toe-to-toe with Division I teams. Vanderbilt's also lost to Kennesaw State, and then you mentioned the Concordia win over UCLA. There's a lot of this happening, and I think it's a good thing for the league, because these D2 teams now schedule D1 teams with a chance of boosting their strength of schedule and getting a better chance of out-of-conference significance.
Trey, so much to talk about, so little time. We appreciate your efforts and are looking forward to having you be our MCLA insider for the duration of the season.
So I guess my audition went well?
It appears that way.
I approve.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Trey.
Thanks, Trey. Talk to you later. That's Trey Lanphier joining us on Lacrosse Talk. When we come back, we'll shift gears to the indoor game of the National Lacrosse League and our insider, Brian Shanahan. You're listening to Lacrosse Talk on the Waxworm Radio Experience.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000. Fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, lacrosse fans. You are listening to North America's first and most comprehensive show dedicated to the sport on the Lax Worm Radio Experience. That is quite a mouthful. We're going to have to get used to that one, Dan. But
so we have sponsors, Max, and we're talking about the blankety-blank lacrosse talk on the Lax Worm Radio Experience presented by blankety-blank.
That'll be better than keeping it short and sweet, I guess, though.
That means money's coming in, my friend. It'll only be a matter of time before people are begging us to get advertising on this radio station, because we are heading down a path of what I think is going to be absolute tremendous success with all of the live play-by-play we're going to have and the shows that are joining the ranks. And I've talked to a few people. We could be adding more and more shows on a weekly basis. I know that we're going to be starting a high school show here in Denver before too long. We can already start a high school show down in Florida. We'll have a conversation with those folks later on this week. Texas, we're going to have the lacrosse spotlight up in the tri-state area here before too long. So, it's just going to keep piling up. And what more can you ask for than a station that is bringing you lacrosse 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Oh, and by the way, we've partnered with Major League Lacrosse. We'll be bringing you at least 31 Major League Lacrosse games, and our shows will be simulcast on their station as well. So we're going to be all over the place, and so will Major League Lacrosse.
And if the games keep up the way that they had this past weekend for both NCAA, MCLA, and NLL, I mean, our work is going to be cut out for us. All we have to do is just watch the games and take it in and then talk to everybody about it. And we won't even have to say much. I mean, just looking at this past weekend in the NCAA, everything that had happened with Loyola, Virginia, Duke playing back-to-back games. You've got the first-timers of Marquette beating Lehigh and Colgate beating Bryant. And then in the NLL, where you have two overtime games. So only two games this week. We ran into another one of those kind of runt weekends where not a whole slate of games, but two fantastic games as well. And we have just the person to talk to about that.
Yeah, and this is a person we can ask one question of, and he could go for the entire segment. This is Brian Shanahan, our NLL insider. And Shanny, the one question, what happened this weekend?
Oh, well, you are absolutely right. The two great week games and a little bit unpredictable, at least Rochester and Minnesota. You know, Rochester got off to a slow start, losing their first two games of the season. And, then they won their next two, and everyone thought Rochester is going to go on a roll now. But Minnesota had different thoughts. And Minnesota won a low-scoring 7-6 overtime game against Rochester. And, I know a lot of people love to see the high-scoring games, but sometimes low-scoring just means there's great goaltending and some great defensive play. And this really was a good game. Minnesota built up an early 5-1 lead. Rochester came back, I think, in the third quarter to score all five goals to go up 6-5. And then Minnesota came back, tied it in overtime. Callum Crawford scored the winning goal. But Yeah, a bit of a surprise. You know, Rochester, three times now this year, they've been held to 8 goals or less. Surprisingly, they've won one of those games where they only scored 8 goals to beat the Toronto Rock 8-6 a few weeks ago. So some people are, you know, wondering if Rochester is a little bit worried about, you know, their start. But what we have to remind ourselves is, you know, in the last 3 years, they've won the championship each year. Two of those years, they got off to terrible starts, and a couple times they were fighting tooth and nail, you know, to get into the playoffs at the end of the season. I think only last year was a year that they were pretty strong the whole season. So I wouldn't be too concerned with Rochester. In fact, you know, these type of games that they've played, it's usually the type of game that you win the playoffs. But, you know, they always say defense wins playoffs. So that was, one bit of excitement. And then in Calgary last night, Calgary lost their fifth game in a row in overtime. And again, this was an exciting game that, you know, went back and forth all game. And with about 2 minutes to go in a game, Calgary was down by 2 goals, looked like it was over. They pulled within one with a minute and a half, pulled their goalie with about 40 seconds to go, were not able to score. Buffalo got the ball back with 15 seconds to go, timeout, and it looked like Buffalo would easily run out the game. And somehow Calgary forced the turnover, tied up the game with 10 seconds to go, and went into overtime. And I think at that point everybody thought Calgary's fortunes had turned. They were going to get their first win. But Jerome Thompson scored the winning goal for Buffalo, and now Calgary's 0-5, but I think they're the best 0-5 team I've ever seen, and I think it's just a matter of time before Lady Luck turns for Calgary. They've lost, three of the games they've lost have been by one goal, two of them in overtime, so they're not as bad as their record, but, you know, at this point, that's little consolation for them when they keep finding new ways to lose.
And Shani, Coach Malosky is not happy with this 0-5 start. I saw something on Twitter saying 10,000 fans in the Saddle Dome, we appreciate you guys. You deserve better than the performance we're putting on the field right now. And you've got the veterans like Curtis Dixon and Sean Evans, who was the player of the year last year, Jeff Shatler. I mean, the experience is there. These guys know how to win in this league. How are they not getting it done?
Well, and some of them are getting a lot of it. Like Sean Evans has 40 points. He's on a pace to shatter the scoring record. He's averaging 8 points a game. So he is putting up the points, and you know, Dixon is as well. And they are just finding different ways to lose. You know, like I still think, even though it was a great game yesterday, Calgary is not playing consistent lacrosse for 60 minutes. I think I mentioned last week, they're a team that's at times brilliant and at times terrible. Honestly, yesterday, though, I wouldn't even say they were ever terrible. There was a few times where you think, how did they leave that guy wide open? I think, you know, Mark Stainhouse scored one goal when there was nobody near him within, you know, 20 yards. And even the commentator had said, isn't he kind of an important guy not to leave wide open? So, you know, there are times where they seem to have brain cramps, but they're not playing terrible lacrosse. They've just... maybe you could say they've had a couple of bad games, but other than that, they've been in 3 games, could have won them. And I do really think it'll turn around. The only problem is, you know, if they don't turn around next weekend, it might be too late. Right now, they're 0-5, and I think most of us believe they'll be fighting for that last playoff spot with Vancouver, who's now 2-3. So it's a must-win weekend for Calgary against Vancouver. Their next 2 games are against Vancouver. Now, if they happen to lose both of those, I think their season's over. I just can't see that happening, though. But, you know, then again, every week, many of us are saying Calgary's too good to keep losing. It's going to change. It just hasn't changed yet. You know, although, you know, the last 2 weeks, a one-goal loss to Toronto Rock and a one-goal loss to Buffalo, and they're, you know, both games that could have gone either way. But it's just not happening, and I agree, Coach Kurt Malowski's getting pretty frustrated with it.
Shani, first place in both divisions potentially on the line next week with 2 home and homes. Toronto and Minnesota play a home and home Friday, Saturday. Edmonton and Colorado play a home and home Friday, Sunday. Do you anticipate that the division leader will change in either of these situations? The second place teams, Minnesota and Edmonton, would have to win 2 in order to change it.
First of all, you know, it's funny because we criticize the scheduling of the NLL, but they got next weekend right, didn't they? With those two matchups. And I do think we may see a change in the West. Edmonton, I still think is, you know, if not the best team in the league, one of the best teams. They got off to a slow start with, you know, Coach Keenan not behind the helm. But since he's been back, they've looked every bit as dangerous as they did last year. So I would not be surprised if Edmonton swept those two games. Then again, if it was a split weekend, that wouldn't surprise me either. So, you know, you kind of expect a split, you know, when you have two good teams playing each other. But if Edmonton won them both, I would not be I wouldn't be shocked. I would be shocked, however, if Colorado managed to win them both. But, I think we could see Edmonton slipping into first place. On the other hand, Toronto Rock and Minnesota, I believe Toronto's the better team, but, we'll see what happens next week. I don't think either team's going to sweep that series. I think we're probably going to see a split, whether it's, each team winning at home or each team winning on the road, who knows. But I think we'll probably see a split there. But it does make for a great weekend with, both of those first-place battles having home-and-home weekends. And I think it'll be pretty exciting.
Brian, last question for you. Looking at the other game that happened yesterday between Minnesota and Rochester, very low-scoring affair. Callum Crawford burying the game winner for Minnesota. But I want to take a look at the Rookie of the Year last year who – we thought, at least I thought, maybe out for, who knows how long he could have been out for the season. Didn't end up missing a game. Would Minnesota have been a different team without Logan Schuss on the roster this year?
I think so. I don't think he carries the team, but I think he's, an important piece of the puzzle. And, only a little over a month ago, we heard he wasn't going to be playing this year. And I think most of it was work commitments. Out west, there was going to be too much traveling. But I don't know if that was just a negotiation ploy or not. But whether it was or not, I think it's great for Minnesota to have him back in the lineup. I believe he got a couple goals and an assist last night, which is pretty impressive, in such a low-scoring game. And he's got such a great outside shot. I think he is an important part of that puzzle. And like I said, though, I don't think he's the most important part of the puzzle. But, good teams that have good chemistry, all those pieces make a difference, and he is a big difference maker on Minnesota.
Brian, as always, your insight on the NLL is appreciated here on Lacrosse Talk. A lot more happening in the world of lacrosse now that the outdoor game has started up. But as you mentioned, next week is going to be one heck of a week for us indoor fans. But thank you for coming on the show with Dan and I today.
Thanks a lot, guys. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season.
Thanks, Shanny.
Take care, boys.
That's Brian Shanahan, our NLL insider. When we come back, I sat down one-on-one with living legend Bill Tierney, head coach of the University of Denver Pioneers. You're listening to Lacrosse Talk on the Laxworm Radio Experience.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTechStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed my do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket. But it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place. And then they act so surprised when I find them. But I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Dan Matthews with head coach Bill Tierney of the Denver Pioneers. And coach, as this year's preseason number one, the Pioneers play with a somewhat different target on their back this year. How does that affect the message to your team?
Well, it's interesting. I think those proverbial targets on the back are there all the time if you want to have a good team and a good result.
It's only a change, past four, five, 13, 12, 11,
and I don't know what we were in the last 4 years, but we've been in three Final Fours, which puts you in the top four. The year that we weren't in the Final Four, we were close, lost to the national champs by a goal. So I think we've put that target on our back just by having great kids and great assistant coaches and doing what we need to do to be good at the end of the year. Certainly the hype, the four polls and rating you number one and all that. We've not been of the ilk of saying, well, you know, it's only the beginning of the season, we'll see what happens at the end. We've been trying to face this with our kids and just saying to them, look, this comes from 3 years ago, Mark Matthews being good, 2 years ago, Cam Flint being good, last year, Jeremy Noble being good, and all of them being a part of this thing. But our freshmen don't know anything about this stuff. So it's kind of convoluted, but we've lost less guys, less impact players than anybody else, so therefore they move you to number one because you were in the Final Four. All good. We'll take that responsibility. I think our guys are handling it somewhat well. I think they found out a little bit more about the responsibility of that when we scrimmaged Hopkins 2 weeks ago, and they realized that that this is going to be a challenge each and every week. It's everybody's, most of the teams you play, it's going to be their big game. If you're number one, they want to be number one, and it taught us some good lessons, and so we move forward. We'll see.
Coach, the last couple of years, you've successfully implemented a two-goalie rotation. This year the job is Ryan's from beginning to end. How does this impact Ryan and his preparation?
Well, thankfully, we addressed this right at the end of last year. Ryan's been watching this situation evolve for the last 2 years, and he's certainly going to miss Jamie being his support and him being Jamie's support. But since that time, Ryan's never been in better physical condition. He came back this past fall in the best shape he's ever been in. He's stronger, he's healthier, he's eating well, he's in the weight room, and he's realizing that, this is why I kept him in the Outlaws game this fall for almost the whole game. Normally we would have taken him out at halftime, as you said. So, Ryan's ready to go. He's one ding away from us having to go with an inexperienced guy. So he's doing everything he can. With Trevor back, I think coaching him, I think that's really helped Ryan's psyche and Trevor working with him each week. We have a real routine for him. We know which days he's got to work hard, which days he's going to, go lighter. But I think he's ready to go, and he's a senior, and he, like his seven classmates, all know that we've been close but no cigar, and this is the one we want to get.
What adjustments do you have to make as a coaching staff to having a single goalie that's going to go the whole distance?
None. I think the adjustments we made were the last 2 years. Right now, this is what the norm is. You have a guy. Now, one of the things we will do is if we're fortunate in some games to have a lead, we have to determine of our three next guys who can give us some valuable moments, and we'll give them each a chance, hopefully early in the year. But you know, you got Duke and Carolina in two of your first four games. You always have that rivalry with Air Force and a new Furman team. So maybe we'll get a chance, maybe not. But that's the adjustment we've got to make, is to find out, because none of those guys are as established as Ryan or Jamie was. It was clear when Ryan was a freshman that he was good enough to be a starter, and he ended up doing that.
The past couple of years, the talk has been about the Thompsons and the success they had at Albany. This year, you have the Cannizzaro brothers. What impact do you expect them to have as the season progresses and the way brothers work together?
No, it's interesting. You know, those four young men, or five or six, depending on how many Thompsons you're talking about, have grown up within 10 miles of each other. And so the Cannizzaros, you know, and the Thompsons. And so it's kind of an interesting thing. You know, we also have Zach Miller and Brendan Bomberry. They're Native American. So if we're talking culturally, we got those guys in our bank. If you're talking, like you said, with the brother thing, certainly having Connor here with Sean for 1 year has been a blessing. And it will prove out to be a blessing as the year goes on. Connor's had to learn to change his game a little bit to play for Matt Brown. You've got to make sure that ball's not in your stick very long. And Connor's been the man of his team ever since playing high school varsity lacrosse in eighth grade, you know, and all the way through last year at Maryland. So he's a wonderful kid. He knows when he reverts back to the old days, and he knows when he has a good day. And each and every day he gets better and better. Sean has always been the guy, the catalyst, the creative slide, I'll give it to somebody else, I don't care about points guys. So they, even though they're brothers, they play a very different style.
Speaking of the old days, I want to take you back a little bit to your days at Johns Hopkins as an assistant lacrosse coach and a head soccer coach. How did those two jobs complement or hinder each other?
Well, it's interesting. The soccer part, of course, was I had to tell Mr. Scott, Bob Scott, who was the AD at the time, world-renowned lacrosse coach, that I had some soccer background that I didn't have, and you know, I shared an office at RIT, which is where I was before Hopkins, with the soccer coach, Doug May, so I, you know, kind of could talk the talk a little bit, but I didn't know what I was talking about. But as I told the soccer kids at the time, as I give great halftime speeches, and I can get them in great shape, and they had to count on me to, and I had to count on them to go through the technical parts of that, and it worked out. You know, Hopkins had only one winning year in 50 years of soccer. In my last 2 years, we ended up 14-3 and made the NCAA tournament. I think the soccer thing, more than helping me at Hopkins with the lacrosse thing, helped me get the job at Princeton, because they figured that, you know, Princeton had hit some tough times, and figured if I could help turn around a soccer program where I knew nothing, maybe I knew a little bit more about lacrosse, so we could help turn that one around. But I do think that the lacrosse part of Hopkins was such a learning experience for me. You know, back then there were no coaching staff limitations like we have now of four coaches. There were literally 9 or 10 coaches on the staff, and I was the only one that wasn't a Hopkins graduate. So even though in title I was the first assistant coach, for all intents and purposes, I was the 9th assistant coach, and had to learn. I had always been a head coach. I had only been an assistant 1 year, and that was my first year out of college, to a buddy of mine named Buddy Krumenacker at Great Neck South High School on Long Island. And so I didn't know what it was like to be an assistant, and so I had to learn a lot of that. I always talk about Freddie Smith, who was the defensive coordinator at Hopkins at the time, who I learned more about lacrosse from him in those 2.5 or 3 years than everybody else combined. So. So they were both very different experiences, but for me personally, very growing experiences. I had to learn a lot more about myself, that's for sure.
Going back to your days at RIT, how has Bill Tierney evolved as a lacrosse coach?
Well, you know, it's I think if you ask certain people, they'd say not at all, and they might have stripes on their shirts. But I think what I've learned, and especially here, although looking back at my Princeton days, I had such wonderful assistant coaches too. I've been blessed with assistant coaches all throughout my career, and what, through Matt Brown and through Trevor, and then Dylan Sheridan the last couple of years, and now John Orson. What I've learned is to trust others to help me do my job. You know, you can't do this by yourself. You're, you know, having 18 to 22-year-old young men, you know, have to do well academically, have to behave, have to be good lacrosse players, have to be healthy, have to, you know, be reminded to call their mom on Valentine's Day, all these things. A head coach needs assistance, and I've got the finest group. So I've learned to listen a lot, and I've learned to learn from those guys. I kind of let my assistants go out. You know, I let them do their thing, and then I'll corral them back in if I don't like what's going on. But in general, these young people speak the same language as the young players that we're coaching, and I've learned, I think, if anything, it used to be my way or the highway for a long, long time, and now we've learned to trust the assistants, trust the kids a little bit more, and listen to what they're saying a little bit better.
I want to bounce back to present day for a minute. You have arguably the deepest midfield and attack in the country. What challenges will that present to you as you game plan each and every week this year?
Yeah, it's maybe the, you know, with that and that problem, if you call it a problem, combined with a little bit of a lack of depth at the defensive end, tend to be the two things we're focusing on, as well as the thing you mentioned before in keeping Ryan LaPlante healthy. You know, it's in some regards you might consider it, a dilemma of riches. You know, if we put Westberg, Jack Bobzien, Zach Miller, Eric Adamson, Tyler Pace, and Connor Canizzaro on the field, we're still leaving Sean Canizzaro off the field. You know, we're still leaving Dallas Bridle off the field. And so what you've got to do, and four offensive freshman midfielders, and then a couple of upperclassmen, Max Planning, Colin Wolford, the problem isn't who you're playing. The problem is who you're not playing. And how do we say to Tyler Pace, who I think is going to emerge as maybe the best midfielder in the game this year, Tyler Pace, Connor Canizzaro, and Eric Adamson, you guys go sit down for a couple of minutes. I got three freshmen I got to get out there. They got to buy into that, and they got to look at the whole season as being a long, long season, and that if we take them out of the Duke game for a little while, or we take them out of the Air Force game for a little while, they can't look at that as, oh, we would be better. We would be a better team against Duke if I was out there. They got to look at that and say, we're going to be better in May because I'm not out there. And if we can accomplish that, then I think we're going to be, we have a shot at this thing.
Bill, let's talk about Eric Adamson a little bit. Eric was a player on his way to Arizona State to play at the highest level of club lacrosse that he could. He finds himself now playing for the number one team in the country at the NCAA Division I level. What was it that you saw in Eric that you felt he could compete and play at this level?
I'll be honest with you. I didn't see anything in Eric. I was told by two people that I trusted dearly. A buddy of mine, Bobby Hartraff, who's a high school coach back on Long Island, who scrimmaged Eric's high school team when they made their spring trip. And another guy named Ray Ralph, who was Eric's assistant coach, who I've known for 100 years. And Bobby was telling me that this kid had such impact on their scrimmage. You're talking about a small high school from California against a powerhouse from Long Island, that Eric dominated this game for his team. And from what Bobby said, he's best player on the field. And then what Ray was telling me more about the kid himself, everybody felt that, not Arizona State per se, but that Eric Adamson playing at a level that was below his potential would be a real sin. And so, you know, over the course of my career, when I hear things like that about people, and Brownie and I talk about this all the time, we recruit people as opposed to players. And we saw Eric those first couple of days of practice. We knew we had done the right thing. So, and I think what's borne out is that Eric, yes, he's been taken out of this situation and put into that one. But Eric's done all of this on his own. He's a 3.9 student. He came in as you said, a California walk-on, so to speak, and has proven every day to everyone that he deserves and, you know, gets drafted in the MLL draft in the first round. So I give him a lot more credit than I give us, that's for sure.
Bill, you're probably one of the coaching icons that young coaches today look up to and would like to emulate. Who are the icons that you wanted to emulate, and what impact have they had on you as you've come along the ranks?
Yeah, somebody asked me last week, why did I become a coach? And it's funny because when I went to college, I knew I wanted to be a coach. And so, and that stemmed from when I was in youth sports, not lacrosse because I didn't play lacrosse as a youth, but, you know, football, basketball, baseball, that I had such great coaches. And these men had such an impact on my life that I wanted to have an impact on other people's lives through the coaching realm. Combining that passion for wanting to be a coach, and then starting when I went to college, the first time I played lacrosse, having a guy like Jack Emmer be the varsity coach then, and played freshman lacrosse my first year, and then having Jack for 2 years, my sophomore and junior year, and certainly Chuck Winters, who was our coach my senior year. But also I go back to guys like, you know, my high school football coach, Nick Belitzis, and my, you know, high school wrestling and football coach, Phil Wolf, and those kind of guys. They just told me what I wanted to be overall. Then when we got to Coach Emmer and Coach Winters, and then certainly, as I mentioned before, you know, Bob Scott was the guy he retired in 1974 after winning a national championship at Hopkins. And then getting to Hopkins, and the head coach was Don Zimmerman, who I thank to this day for hiring me. But this guy, Freddie Smith, Freddie was at the time 60 years old, 60-something years old, and he just took me under his wing, and he helped me survive in this thing. So many other guys, you know, lacrosse isn't a sport where you're a genius. Lacrosse is a sport where you're a thief, and you just end up taking ideas from lots of different guys, putting them into what you like, into your little package. My two best friends in lacrosse, Dave Cottle and Tony Seaman, who are great college coaches, both pro coaches now, you know, those guys were instrumental to my success. Ray Rostand, my best friend in college, best man in each other's weddings, and been the coach at Hampton Sydney for 28 years or something. Those are the kind of guys that you just learn from and bounce things off. And now you got these young coaches. You know, I recruited Dave Petromala to come to play for me at Hopkins, but now he's a guy I certainly look up to. And now John Donowski at Duke, who he and I grew up 5 miles from each other, played with each other club lacrosse after college, but he's become the Phil Jackson, the guru of lacrosse, and I just certainly look up to him. You know, guys I've coached, John DiTommaso and Dave Petromala and some of those, and certainly all those great Princeton teams and players, and maybe most of all having my son Trevor and Brownie next to me here has helped be my mentor, so to speak, even though these are young guys. It's kind of like the old theory of, what you reap is what you sow, and that's what's happening right now.
Prior to sitting down with me this morning, you were in the basketball office talking with head coach Joe Scott here at the University of Denver. I've had opportunity to speak with Joe on a couple of occasions in the press box during your games, and he talks about how similar these two sports are. What do the two of you bounce off of each other, and how does that help each of you in what you're doing?
Well, I think what happens is when you get together with a guy like Joe, who I've known for years. He was the assistant at Princeton when I first came there. He was the head coach at Princeton. You know, obviously both Pete Carril disciples. So we tend to have these different sports, but we say the same things. Today's message together was the whole is equal to the sum of its parts, and no one man can take that whole thing and carry it on his back. And so we believe about things like do what we do, and then your individual talents will make you shine. But if you try to make your individual talents shine before you do what we do, that's a recipe for disaster. So I think it's a lot of similar stuff, a lot of the messages that you hear of other coaches talk about, you got to have passion for the game for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You got to appreciate every. One of the things we stress is appreciating the last guy on the team because he's as important as the first. So just, you know, it's always refreshing to me to hear Joe because he's such a smart, good coach, and he gets it, and he wants his team to play that full 40 minutes just like we want our guys to play that full 60 minutes of of doing what we do so that we can succeed, as opposed to doing what you do so that you can succeed. Because oftentimes, if you do that, we're not going to succeed. And it's just fun talking to him always. He's always got great perspective on whether it's basketball, lacrosse, or life in general.
Coach, we all have our heroes, and in my business, one of mine is Dan Rather. And in homage to Dan Rather, my last question for you today would be, what question haven't I asked that I should have?
You know, there's so many things that go into this thing and that we do. And, you know, I think that people once in a while get asked this, and I think it's really important because I get so much, I get the praise of what young men do for me is, you know, just to talk a little bit about the University of Denver reigniting my batteries, reigniting my charge, and allowing me to come. They didn't know me from Adam, and allowing me to come and really, you know, you could say in a nice way, put my trademark on this thing, or you could say it in another way, you know, clean house and get things in order. But I'm so appreciative to that. And most of all, when you look back on this thing, and we're always talking about individual wins, and the next game, we're playing Duke next Saturday, the next game, and yet the things that you cherish when you get to be 63 years old and look back on is the wins do create culture and do create atmosphere, but there's nothing like looking back or hearing from a player who played for you in the past, played for you in the past, saying thank you. You know, one of the sayings I've always used to our guys is I've never, in 30, almost 40 years of coaching, I've never had a kid write me 5 or 10 years later and say, thanks for being so easy on me. You know, and so sometimes it's tough, and I know how playing for me can be a bear, but, you know, I firmly believe that what we do, yes, coach's life is on the scoreboard and in his record, but what we do is deeper than that, and you know, we use the word love around here a lot with our team. That doesn't mean like sometimes. Love means we're stuck with each other and we better deal with it. Like sometimes doesn't, but you know, I'm just proud of those factors and the fact that, you know, I've been blessed by God enough to go into another season healthy and with another great group of young men that's going to fight for a national championship.
Like your players, I too will always owe you a debt of gratitude because you came to Denver at the same time I was starting lacrosse talk five and a half years ago, and you were one of my very first interviews upon your acceptance of this job, and it's been great to work with you over the course of the last 6 years, and I hope for many more.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thanks, Dan.
Bill, thanks for the time.
Sure.
Welcome back to the Dog Show. Up next, Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group. That's right, a group known especially for their couch snuggling, ball chasing, face licking, tail wagging, backyard hanging, and of course, companionship. And what breed would you say Satchmo is? I'd have to go with maybe a lavish terrier hound chihuahua looking kind of mix. Tremendous dog. I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle. Simply marvelous. You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this. Now, let's see him in action. Look how he makes eye contact with his person. That's actually known as the treat stare. How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles. Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group. And finally, the loving face lick. It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks. Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one. Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human. And she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Girls show up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and theshelterpetproject.org.
Me, a cat, moving in with a new human. It took a little getting used to. She has these weird games she likes to play, like this giant feather. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. It's almost like she thinks I enjoy it. But seeing how much fun she gets out of it, well, I guess it makes it all worth it. Humans. A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Welcome back to Lacrosse Talk. Dan Matthews with Max Frater, and just coming off my one-on-one interview with Bill Tierney earlier this week, I will tell you that Bill Tierney is a prince, Max Frater, and to have the opportunity to sit down with him for 20 minutes on a Thursday morning was a great experience. And like I said in the interview, he was one of my very first interviews when this show started, so it's just a great experience to be involved with a man of his stature, of his caliber in the world of lacrosse.
I'm bummed I couldn't be there to join you on that interview, but you know, last year my scenery was across the state in Grand Junction, so I had a much harder time getting to those DU games. Now not so much, so I know that there will be more opportunities to sit down and introduce myself to the legend, Bill Tierney.
Our next guest is the head coach at St. Joseph's University, and I would have much preferred to have talked to him last week before yesterday's game, but we may have more fodder to talk about this week. Head coach Taylor Ray of the St. Joe's Hawks. Taylor, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Taylor, we sure appreciate it. I wish we were talking about a victory today, but we're not. Give us your 60-second analysis of yesterday's game and not only what people can expect of your team for the rest of the year, what people might expect out of that Richmond club.
Well, overall, it was sort of a disappointing initial outing. I thought we had some opportunities early to get on the scoreboard and didn't make the most of them, and then found ourselves a bit of a hole. And to be honest, it was the first time in a while we've been in that situation. So it was tough to climb out of, and they did a great job sort of putting us in difficult spots to score. And I think the Richmond team is good. They're very well coached. They have good systems, and they're a good team, so I think they're going to have a great season. They won their league a year ago, and I don't think that was any fluke. They're a new program, only in their second year, but they've got talented players and they've got great coaches. So they're going to have another terrific season.
Coach, thank you for joining us on the show. It's a little different for us to be talking about the opening weekend of lacrosse coming on the 8th of February, and I'm sure it's different for you as a coach. Talk about what it's like to be starting your schedule up after the week after January, and then also with the new additions with the new face-off rules and the physical shot clock on the field.
Well, the early season games, I guess, is – whether you're starting on the, February 7th or February 14th, it really, it ain't going to be much different. The weather probably isn't going to be very good. Down in Richmond this weekend, though, it was 57 degrees, and I was coaching without a jacket on. So that certainly wasn't a factor in this game. But the new rules didn't really impact the game a whole lot. Certainly from the face-off standpoint, the only real difference is the guys can't carry the ball. They're still popping it out in the back of their stick. And, it does become a little bit more important to have support from your wings and to have a face-off guy who's athletic enough to contest ground balls. But, we didn't really feel a whole lot of difference there. And then in our game, there was no shot clock on scenario. So neither team had a shot clock on. Actually, that's not true. Richmond had one, but it was sort of in the, the tail end of the game where they were, intentionally eating some clock, protecting their lead. So during the general course of play, the shot clock wasn't a factor at all.
Taylor, we spoke with Terry Foy from Inside Lacrosse last week, and one of the things that he said was that the St. Joseph's Hawks are this year's sleeper team. They're the team that everybody needs to be wary of. They're going to be out there, and they're going to be competing and could very well wind up winning their conference a break or two in their direction. What do you guys need to do after yesterday's game to be that team?
Well, I think yesterday's game was a bit of a reality check for us. You know, we're a good team. You know, we're by no means a great team. You know, we're a good team when we play together and we play tough and fundamentally sound, and you know, we execute the things that you know are part of our game plan and that our players are coached to do. And we didn't do a good job of that yesterday. And you know, a lot of that falls on me as a head coach to make sure our guys are better prepared and we're doing a better job, you know, simulating some of those situations. And, you know, for us moving forward, it was a learning experience, and that's what these early season games are for. You know, we feel like we have our most talented team in my tenure at St. Joe's, and now it's a matter of, you know, figuring out how to put the pieces together. So our goal for the season is to win a conference championship, and you know, that certainly doesn't change after yesterday's game. You know, hopefully for our team, you know, it's an opportunity to kind of refocus and get back to basics, and you know, understand that, you know, people are saying that nice things about us, but that doesn't mean that we're going to win games. You know, you have to go out there and perform. And that's really the bottom line.
Coach, taking a look at your schedule, you guys have a long time before you're actually getting into the thick of your conference schedule. March 28th is when you guys start things off against Bryant. You've got some big games before then. You've got Virginia, you've got Drexel, you've got Penn, and then next week you've got a very hot High Point team. Do you see this as a little bit of a benefit to you guys to be able to see some more film on the competition for the league that you have to win to make the big dance?
Yeah, I mean, I think most leagues now are set up in a fashion where, you know, you play your non-conference schedule and then you start league play and you pretty much go continuous league play with maybe a bye weekend, you know, at the tail end of your season. So I don't think we're any different than most conferences, but you know, everything, you know, leads up to conference play. You know, we understand that for us to be in the postseason, you know, to be playing in our conference tournament, that's where we gotta earn the right to do that. So we think we have some teams on our schedule that will certainly test us and challenge us, and we'll find out really what we're made of along the way. And you know, hopefully that'll put us in a good position to be ready to compete once the conference play starts.
Taylor, you're going to be battling with that Bryant squad in all likelihood. You've got to beat Bryant to win the crown in the NEC. You played for Coach Mike Pressler at Duke. What did you take away from Coach Pressler that has helped you as you coach today?
Well, I think Coach Pressler is an incredibly detail-oriented guy. I mean, you play for Coach Pressler, and you know you're always going to be prepared to the minute details. And I think that's, you know, what makes him such a great coach. You know, he gets his teams ready to go. He's great at scouting other teams and putting a game plan in place that gives you an opportunity to compete to win. And so that's what we try and do with our team at St. Joe's. You know, we try and look at, you know, every detail about how the other team plays and try and find maybe a weakness here or there that we can pick on and figure out, you know, where our team best matches up against their, you know, their personnel and their systems and, you know, where we might be able to have some success. And, you know, obviously I think they're now the three-time reigning champ in the NEC, and, you know, hopefully in the near future somebody else will win the title. But it's a battle in our league. You know, there are no easy games for us. There are no easy games for us at any point in our schedule, and certainly not within our league. So we're not focused on Bryant. We're not focused on any one particular team. We're focused on getting better and hopefully playing our best lacrosse towards the tail end of the season.
coaches are all independent and individual, but are there any other coaches out there that you try to emulate or model yourself after?
I think you take bits and pieces from everybody that you are fortunate enough to be around. You know, I do enjoy picking Matt Brown's brain a little bit. Matt Brown, the assistant coach at Denver, and a good friend of mine, a guy that I grew up playing with. So I like to talk to him a bunch about things that Coach Tierney does. I think anybody who's had the amount of success that he's had and, you know, has really done what he's done at Denver in such a short amount of time to turn them into a national championship contender has been pretty impressive. So, you know, I like to figure out what those guys are doing a little bit. You know, Joe Alberisi at Army was the associate head coach when I was at Duke, so I stay in touch with him. And, you know, obviously working with Kevin Cassis and, you know, us having played together and been close friends and worked together at Lehigh when he was getting things going up there, I'll check in with him a lot to see what they're doing and how they're doing it and, you know, what were some of the things they did to get over the hump in the third and fourth and fifth year. So I think, you know, whenever you get a chance to be around people that have been successful, you know, you try and take bits and pieces away. So, you know, there's certainly guys that you're closer with, but those are a few that, you know, I like to try and learn from.
So, Coach, you have a game under your belt from this past weekend, and as we all know, February lacrosse can be pretty messy when you finally get everybody on the field playing someone other than themselves. What do you take away from this game from Richmond that you're going to take to the drawing board and make sure you guys improve upon before you hit the field against High Point next weekend?
Well, you know, I think we need to be a little bit sharper in our clearing game. We were 10 for 19, which is, you know, for lack of a better word, just awful. And a lot of the mistakes that we made in the clearing were due to Richmond's pressure. You know, they do a zone 10-man ride that, you know, if you make bad decisions once you've kind of got through the first layer of pressure, you know, you'll turn the ball over. And I felt like we were prepared for it, but when we got out there in the moment, our guys didn't make great decisions. And what could have or maybe should have been scoring opportunities for us were sort of floundered with poor stick work and things like that. We need to shoot the ball better. You know, we were 5 for 41 shooting on Saturday, and you know, especially early on in the game, we had some great high percentage looks at the net. So continuing to improve our shooting is going to be a key for us, and you know, limiting mistakes on defense. I think that we played a pretty good defensive game last weekend, but there were two or three goals where, you know, we just fell asleep. And in Division I lacrosse, it's so tight that, you know, you can't afford to give up any easy ones. You know, two or three goals in a game that's, you know, going to be decided by one at the end, you just can't let it happen. So you need to be a little bit sharper in some of those critical minutes. We got scored on, I think, with under 10 seconds left in the second quarter and the third quarter, which I thought in both cases were preventable opportunities.
Coach, we sure appreciate your time on Lacrosse Talk. This is your second appearance on the show. Look forward to many more as the years wane on.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoy coming on here. I appreciate what you guys are doing.
Thank you. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, Coach. Good luck.
Thanks very much. All the best.
And to you. That's head coach Taylor Ray of the St. Joseph's Hawks joining us on Lacrosse Talk. Max, a lot different show than what we're used to with no commercial breaks and an eternity to talk with our guests, but a great list of guests that it was. Want to take a minute to thank Eamon McEnany, Trey Lanthier, Brian Shanahan, head coach Bill Tierney of the DU Pioneers, and last but certainly not least, head coach Taylor Ray of the St. Joe's. You've been listening to Lacrosse Talk on the Waxworm Radio Experience. Until next week, so long, everybody.